The French-Canadian singer Celine Dion is the best-selling female artist in the world. She's sold more than 175 million albums. Some say that Dion has a five-octave range. Yet Celine Dion is also one of the most unpopular singers in the world. There are millions of people who are not fans. You could count Carl Wilson among those non-fans. Wilson is a writer and editor at the Globe and Mail, Canada's national newspaper. He's also the author of a book called Let's Talk About Love, A Journey to the End of Taste. Let's Talk About Love is the title of Dion's hit album featuring the monster hit from the Titanic soundtrack. Wilson talked to Anne Strainchamps about what Celine Dion has taught him about musical taste.
When you began this book, you not only didn't see much purpose or meaning to Celine Dion's work, you actually hated it. What is it that you hated so much, disliked so much about her music?
I think there were a couple of things. One was the sort of enormousness of the sound, which seemed really kind of tacky and overdone. The other kind of going along with that, I think if it were only that, I would have maybe just been indifferent to Celine Dion. But I think it was also the fact that as a Canadian, Celine kind of is one of the foremost cultural exports that we have. And people make a lot of fun of Celine Dion. You know, if you go through press clippings, you'll find no end of jokes and jabs. And very often those jabs actually rope in Canada along the way. And so I felt a sort of personal implication. And at the time that Let's Talk About Love came out, I was living in Montreal, close to where Celine's from. So it was a very sort of central cultural thing in the air around me. And so there was this kind of personal embarrassment with the association that I felt. And I felt that the sort of figure that she cut as a female performer was kind of retrograde and embarrassing on that level. So there were all these kinds of secondary associations.
Why do you think her work is so polarizing, that people seem to either love it or loathe it?
I think that there's a couple of reasons. One is that it paints in such sort of broad emotional colors that either you respond to that wholeheartedly, and you know that, like, there's few artists out there whose goal is so clearly to make you cry. And some people want to give over to that and enjoy that kind of emotional pull. And I think other people find it kind of threatening. You know, this idea that you're supposed to just give in to sentiment and give in to big, broad emotions. And I think on top of that, it's also that she doesn't play by any of the kind of culture vulture rules. You know, she's clearly not that interested in doing anything innovative or subversive or any of the things that usually people who pride themselves on their in-the-know cool musical tastes kind of look for. She's going for a whole other set of values, which are kind of more old-fashioned showbiz values, but doing it in a very kind of modern, slick, packaged way. And so people find that combination uncomfortable too, I think.
So you also then later tracked down some Celine Dion fans and talked with them. To tell me about some of the fans and what you learned from them.
Well, I think that for me, talking to the fans was mostly an exercise in understanding how different people's tastes can be from one another, and yet how that doesn't dictate any other conclusion about the people you're talking to. You know, I had really lovely conversations with people. One guy told the story of how discovering Celine through My Heart Will Go On when he was a teenager, and he was like a gay teenager with an alcoholic parent and, you know, really having a rough time. And he felt like discovering this kind of music that just sort of spoke so optimistically and boldly about love and sacrifice and hope pulled him back from the brink. And he's been a dedicated fan ever since. He really credits her with sort of having saved his life.
Distance and spaces between us. You have come to show you. Go on.
I talked to another young man who was born in a Cambodian refugee camp and was a sort of hardcore Christian and a musician and video artist himself. And, you know, he talked about Celine with this incredible respect, but also all of this sort of Christian music and other artists that I was just like, wow, you know, our tastes couldn't be further apart, and yet you couldn't be a nicer, smarter, more interesting, ambitious, impressive kid. And really feeling that kind of sense of destabilization a little bit in these conversations where it's like, oh, what makes my opinions any better than yours, you know? And that was really an instructive exercise, that it started to seem a little bit that all of these things that we fight about and believe so strongly, you know, and we'll defend our favorite art and music to the death and speak scornfully of the things we don't like. It's like, it all starts to seem a lot more arbitrary than it normally does.
Well, did you ever get to the point where you felt like, you know, I think I was wrong. I think she really is good.
I think I did get to that point. You know, I still feel like you don't undo your own aesthetics in, you know, a few months of trying. And I think that all of your experiences kind of come around to affecting those things. But I certainly came to discover a lot of her music that I hadn't heard before. And you know, she actually works in a much wider stylistic range than I had realized and than most people realize, because we only hear the sort of big power ballads on the radio. But she does R&B and disco and, you know, on Let's Talk About Love, she actually does dancehall reggae and, you know, pretty well, actually. So those things were surprises. And I also just came to feel like I respected the craft that goes into her work. And I respected the people who found value in that craft. And I began to see artistic values that I would normally sort of take secondary, you know, everything from sort of the epicness of it to the actual sentimentality of it and the sort of emotional range of it that's very different than the things that I usually pay attention to. And I came to see all of those things as a lot more valid than I had before.
So play that out in terms of one particular song. The most successful, by far the best known song from this album is My Heart Will Go On, that love theme from the Titanic movie. It's become Dion's signature song, and one, you know, you said you really didn't like much. Did you find something you came to like about it?
It was one of the ones that I had more difficulty with than others, partly because it is in that sort of CinemaScope style. And partly because it was so overexposed at the time. And, you know, I think part of the reason that it always ends up on those most annoying songs list is there really was like a 2-year period where you couldn't get away from hearing it all the time. And no matter how good or bad something is, you know, that's always going to have an adverse effect on a lot of people's opinion of a piece of music. But I did come to see how pretty the melody is and how touching the sort of underlying sentiment of this kind of love really in relationship to the idea of death. You know, that's kind of what the song is about, is about even after we're lost to each other, you know, that this kind of sense of love being eternal. And that's an idea that I may not think literally possible, but at the same time, you know, can find myself moved by. And I listen to a lot of versions of that song done by other people, you know, and everything from sort of punk rock style to Chinese traditional covers, you know, it's been done many, many, many times. And so being able to hear it sort of through that prism too, and understanding the various ways that that piece of music can be used, I came to feel a greater respect and appreciation for what people are so attached to about it. But I wouldn't say it's one of the ones that I still have in heavy rotation on my iTunes.
So the subtext of what you were doing was kind of trying to get at what is it that happens when we wind up at that place where, you know, you say to somebody, God, I hate that song. And the other person says, are you kidding? I love that song. That's a great song. How can you not like that song? You know, when you get to that place where the two people are just looking at each other saying, how can you feel that way about this piece of music? Did you find a way to, I guess, what did you learn about that impasse when we get to that place?
I think I learned that the first reaction that I want to have in that conversation is not to say, are you crazy? You know, I think the first question I want to say is, oh, well, why? How did you, what is it about it that you like? How did you first hear it? What does it call up for you? In what context do you listen to it? You know, how does it fit into your life? And the idea that our tastes, rather than being something that indicates some kind of fundamental goodness or evilness, are part of our story. And I think that depending where you're coming from socioeconomically and educationally, you have a very particular story that probably compares to stories of people with similar backgrounds. And so to sort of understand tastes as an element of personality primarily rather than something that has to be given a number value, you know, that this is a 4-star record. You know, and I think that saying that something's a 4-star record is a less interesting story than describing where it fits into our lives and our experiences.
Carl Wilson is the author of Let's Talk About Love, A Journey to the End of Taste. He spoke with N. Strange Champs.